from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, the bureau that provides me with the news bulletins is suffering from, or is enduring, going through some technical problems. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It's good to be with you. I hope your Monday is going well as can be expected. This hour, I will be joined by Luke from the Kate and Luke Cafe in Burnage, making the news today. Kate and Luke have refused to close their cafe during this lockdown. Yesterday they were raided and Luke was arrested. During that arrest, it appears that he was assaulted by a police officer. I caught up with him earlier on, recorded an interview with him. You'll hear it very soon. Luke from the Kate and Luke Cafe in Burnage. And later on, it being a Monday, Dr. Vernon Coleman from vernoncoleman.com will drop in as usual to provide some balance. The only balance you'll find anywhere. The only doctor on the radio, whether mainstream or independent in the UK, providing the alternative opinion to the government's lockdown position. The government's daily proclamations about lockdown and about the virus. Dr. Vernon Coleman, second hour, as usual. That is Monday's programme. And I won't tell you again how to tweet the programme, because you know how to do that now. Just tweet it. There's a blizzard outside. There's a blizzard outside. It's like we're living in a snow globe and somebody has turned us upside down and given us a good shake. There's a blizzard out there. It looks like a blizzard. Russian people now listening to this are going, yeah, right, you baldy bastard. Yeah, right, blizzard. I'll give you blizzard. I know that. I'm well aware of it. Very cold today. Temperatures around about 1 degree Celsius, but it felt much cooler because of the wind shear. Very cold, very bitter wind today. I don't know what it's like where you are. It might be snowing. It might have stuck on the ground. It might be causing problems. But here, it hasn't done that yet. The beast from the east, too, they are dubbing this weather. Yeah. The beast from the east, too. My weekend, pleasant, relaxing. I was with you yesterday morning, of course, Sunday morning melodies. I did have some emails yesterday. Let me please reiterate. Sunday morning melodies is kind of a one-off. No. Don't say that now. You'll confuse people. It will take place every Sunday for the foreseeable future at 10 o'clock. But you can only hear it on Sunday. You can only hear it on Sunday and only on richieallen.co.uk. It isn't archived. Do you understand? Okay, I'm not going to say it again. Now, to the news. A study has found that the Oxford AstraZeneca coronavirus vaccine gives minimal protection against mild disease from the South African variant. Did you catch this today? The South African variant. The Oxford jab giving minimal protection, not doing so well against the South African variant. Scientists say we're still confident that it will protect against serious disease. Now, it has been alleged that 147 cases of this South African variant have been found in the UK. The Oxford vaccine, say the scientists, has shown to provide good protection against the Kent variant.
What kind of fuckery is this?
I know, I can't believe I'm speaking in these terms. This is what they are presenting you and me, our friends in the news business. Yes, the Oxford jab is maybe problematic against the South African variant, but it's showing good protection against the Kent variant, and the Kent variant is at the moment the dominant strain in the UK. But some commentators are wondering, what if the South African variant becomes more dominant than the Kent variant? Are we screwed? I don't know. Here's the Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaking about the variants and the vaccines today. He remains predictably confident.
We believe that our vaccines are effective in combating a serious disease and death against all variants. But the most important thing is that the vaccinologists, the scientists, are getting ever faster and more expert in coming up with the new vaccines and the variants of the vaccines, if you like, that enable us to defeat the virus. So, yes, we're doing everything we can to contain new variants, but we're also increasingly confident, as I say, that science, medicine, is gaining the upper hand over coronavirus and all its variants.
Science will triumph, according to Boris Johnson. What's going on then with the variants and the dominant strains and all of that? Wait till you hear the BBC Health editor, Fergus Walsh. Wait till you hear him. Now remember, he doesn't work for the government, nor does he work for the companies that manufacture the jabbies, the vaccines. No, let me repeat, he's not a government agent, as far as I can tell. He doesn't work for the pharmaceutical companies. Hard to tell, though, as he explains the concerns over the variants to the presenter Rita Chakrabarty today. Here's Fergus Walsh, the BBC's health editor.
The key message, Rita, is the current two vaccines being used around the UK, the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine, are highly effective against the dominant strain, the Kent variant in the UK. That is the key message, and it's vital that people are not put off going for their vaccine. We've had an incredibly successful rollout so far. And I think there's a danger that headlines talking about a very small study in South Africa could potentially make people hesitate about going to have their jab, which would be utterly wrong. Now, if the South Africa variant, which has been around here since December, suddenly started to take off in a big way and start displacing the Kent variant, then...
It took off in a big way and started to displace the Kent variant.
Then perhaps at some point in the future, people having vaccines would have less protection against mild and moderate disease. But it looks pretty likely that the vaccines that we have would still protect against really serious disease. I mean, vaccines are the answer to this pandemic, and it fortunately is quite simple to tweak them. So it's possible come the autumn that we might need a booster jab. But for now, it's, you know, roll up your sleeves and have the jab.
Vaccines are the answer. Hey, hey. Who do you think he's representing there then? Have a think about it. Who do you think Fergus Walsh was representing? Was he representing his employer, the BBC? Was he doing his job? Was he representing Billy Poison Jabs Gates, was he? Was he representing AstraZeneca? Was he representing the government? It's kind of hard to tell there, wasn't it? Oh, journalism, eh? Journalism. Wow. That was Fergus Walsh. So many variants. And I suppose, we joke about this all the time, I suppose as time goes on, the way we're going to be kept in our boxes, that's me and you, by the way, and by boxes I mean our homes, our apartments, our flats, is because variants are going to emerge all the time. So many variants. Soon, doctor surgeries and vaccination centres will have lots of different coronavirus jabs for all the different variants. I know you think I'm messing. I know you think I'm messing. Now, it could become very easy. It could become extremely easy to make a mistake and give the wrong vaccine. For example, you might give the Kent variant to somebody when the person has already had the Kent variant already. You were meant to give them the South African variant. Do you understand? Right? It's easy. It's easy to happen. Or vice versa. Or the Ballymun Dublin variant. Right? That's been around for a bit now. You could have given that vaccine to somebody and then they come back in for another variant and you give them the Ballymun variant again, it's no good. So I've devised a system myself. It's fairly simple, fairly straightforward. It couldn't be any simpler indeed. Doctors under enormous pressure. They've got presses, a press. They've got larders full of these vaccines, all these different variants. I've devised a little system so that when the doctor opens the press, they don't even need to look. It's very simple. For example, when you want the South African variant vaccine, the COVID South African variant vaccine. Very simple. Do you like that? Couldn't be easier. What about the Ballymun variant, if they need the Ballymun variant? Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Brilliant. And finally, if they need the Kent variant, right? So you just open the press. You need the Kent variant. The Kent variant. We need the Kent variant.
Rabbit, 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 rabbit.
Couldn't be any simpler. I've patented that. Next time Dragon's Den is back on the telly and there's no social distancing, I'm going to have a go. I'm going to have a pop. Hey, listen, by the way, regarding the South African variant, Labour leader Keir Starmer wants to close the borders.
I think the South African variant is the single biggest risk at the moment. And it's very important, therefore, that we secure our borders. We've known about the South African variant for some time. If you can believe it, it's going to be 50 days from knowing about the variant to border restrictions, quarantine and hotels coming in. And even between now, today, and those restrictions coming in, 200,000 people are going to come into the country. Add to that, and this is probably the most significant thing, a number of other countries we now know have the South African variant, and they're not even in the government scheme for quarantining in hotels. This is leaving a back door open at a vital stage in the battle against the virus.
Yeah. If you feel like it, you could always try and sue the Labour Party under the Trades Description Act. Her Majesty's opposition, my arse, eh? Nurse, I need some Kent variant, please.
Rabbit, 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 rabbit.
Absolutely. I know. I'm here all week. I'm here all week. Keir Starmer there. Lock the borders. Lock the borders. Be Jesus. James O'Brien, about the worst radio presenter the world has ever seen or known. He had a doctor on his LBC radio programme this morning. The doctor is gutted. The doctor is gutted because his daddy won't have the vaccine. His daddy won't have the vaccine, even though his son, the GP, has tried to alleviate his fears or allay his fears. This is good.
I'm a GP. My father is a taxi driver and coming close to retirement age.
Yeah.
He worked hard all his life to ensure that I had a good education, and it was a dream come true when I became a doctor and I'm now a GP.
Yes.
But then since his vaccination issue came along, he basically said absolutely not taking it. And if it worse comes to worse, I'll you know, on a prolonged holiday back to where I came from.
So he'll flee the country if he feels that he's going to be compelled to take it. Well, that ties in with I think the earlier caller talking about elders going back to Ghana.
And my dad loves his sons and daughters, and especially his grandchildren.
Yes.
So for him to make a statement like that was a massive.
Well, what's going on? I mean, how shocked were you? I mean, you did you know that he was even flirting with this kind of worldview?
Flirting with this kind of worldview, says James O'Brien. What worldview is that? I don't need the vaccine, thanks. I'll take me chances, thanks very much. I'm in good health, thanks. If I get a virus, my immune system will probably cope with it. Thank you very much. So, what kind of worldview is O'Brien talking about?
Kind of worldview?
No, yeah, well, social media doesn't help.
And, right.
Especially that generation where they're able to click and suddenly find themselves, you know.
Yeah, if it wasn't for social media, thousands of people would have been injured by vaccines. Over the years, not necessarily the coronavirus vaccine, but vaccines. Thank God for social media in that respect, that people have been able to make a genuinely informed decision about whether or not to get the jab, you see. Because the mainstream media deliberately hides information from its audience, deliberately buries facts and figures that show that sometimes, not always, but sometimes, vaccines can be very harmful. If it wasn't for social media, people wouldn't know that. And people wouldn't have chosen not to have vaccines. And more people would have been harmed by harmful vaccines, like Gardasil, for example. But anyway.
All this information that they don't necessarily know how to process.
To the algorithm. So they click on one thing and suddenly all they're seeing on their feed is and it could be completely unhitched from reality.
Exactly. So I thought the solution would be I'd get the vaccination myself. Obviously, I'm being a healthcare professional.
I don't believe him.
Yes,
I was offered it, and I took it up, and I thought that'll get rid of any.
That'll show him.
His son that he's so proud of, and who's a doctor who's going to know what the ins and outs of all these things. And it was like, well, just look back at yourself. I was like, what kind of...
It didn't butter a single parsnip with your old man?
No.
What was that? Is that a technical term, Dad? I never heard that one before.
Beans and outs of all these things. And it was like, well... just look back at yourself. I was like, oh, what kind of...
It didn't butter a single parsnip with your old man?
No, it didn't. But if I look back, there are clues. And this is something that may have been mentioned during your previous phone calls, is my dad also has diabetes, and he's not been very happy with the medicines. He's always looking for an alternative therapy or a herbal remedy or something that he can take in terms of another food supplement that might stabilise...
O'Brien groaned when the GP said that his diabetic father is looking for alternative treatments for his diabetes, herbal remedies. O'Brien groaned. Why do you think, dear listener, that the GP's old man is searching for alternative remedies for his diabetes? I wonder, could it be that the toxic shit that he gets prescribed for it and the insulin isn't doing him much good at all, I wonder? I wonder, is that why he's gone looking for an alternative? Anyway, I won't play any more of that. Butter a parsnip. Didn't butter a parsnip with him. Jesus. I like his daddy. I like his daddy a lot, goddammit. Right, enough of that nonsense and messing around. My experience, it sounds like the guy is Asian, right? Right? Okay. Am I making a big leap there? Probably not. My experience of driving around Manchester, not driving, but being driven around Manchester by cabbies, when they are Asian, they are generally in the know. In the know. The amount of times even I've gotten into a cab in this city, in Manchester predominantly, and occasionally I'll get recognised. Well, my voice will be recognised. Are you Richie? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, often I'm not, but we get talking about things anyway. And I'm amazed at how in the know that community is. Shouldn't be surprised, because stories today everywhere that they're really struggling to get so-called BAME communities to take this vaccine. That's black, Asian, minority, ethnic people are increasingly reluctant. They just don't believe the government. Why should they? Right? Have the vaccine. No, thank you. I'll be all right. Thanks. And what I'm fascinated about, dear listener, as are you, how far will they go to impose this vaccine on you and on me? We'll talk more about that in a moment. We'll talk more about it in a moment. James O'Brien there. James O'Brien. Let's talk about no jab, no job momentarily. Let me bring this up here. This, again, was topical on television and radio this morning, fairly topical. And it was discussed on national radio weekend programming over the last couple of days. And it's the idea that companies might be able to insist that their employees are vaccinated because it will then offer greater protection to the wider company, to the rest of the employees, basically. And this has been discussed quite a bit. And The Telegraph had a very interesting story today. And The Telegraph said that while on the one hand, the vaccine minister, Nadeem Zahawi, is dismissing a scheme of let's say, health passports, not for travelling, not for getting into the cinema, not for getting into restaurants per se, but a passport to employment. And on the one hand, this guy, Nadeem Zahawi, Tory vaccine minister, is saying that this would be discriminatory and it isn't how we do things in the UK. On the other hand, the Telegraph newspaper has been in contact with health ministers that are strongly arguing in favour of that. That health and safety laws are there to protect other people at work. And that when it comes to protecting other people, you might be compelled to have a jab. They did concede that it might be easier to insist on an incoming new member of staff. It might be easier to insist that he or she has the jab rather than insist that an existing employee actually has it. So if you've been in the company for 6 months, a year, 12, 18 months, 5 years, might be more difficult. Now, I see a number of you today on social media and I'm with you. You're saying, no, it's illegal, Nuremberg and all of this, European human rights law and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can quote that until you are blue in the face. If they want to compel employees up and down the country to be vaccinated and to show that they have been vaccinated in order to return to the workplace, they'll do it. Have no doubt about that. Be under no illusion. They will do it. And I believe it's in the plans. It's their plan to do it. And I believe we're going to hear more and more about it in the coming weeks and months as more and more people are vaccinated. So watch this one carefully. The former Brexit Secretary, David Davis, former, of course, one-time Tory leadership candidate too, was on Julia Hartley Brewer's programme on Talk Radio today, and he had this to say about the idea of vaccine passports.
Firstly, you know, you've always got to be careful with any government when they offer you something which is temporary, that it will actually be temporary. And we've had in the past, as you mentioned, we've had attempts again to have us carry ID cards. In this country, we've never had to allow officials to stop us and say, can I see your papers, please? That's very, very critical to British liberty. And that's what this would amount to. That's what it would amount to. You'd have to carry a piece of paper and say, you can go to the pub. You can go to here or there. So that's the first thing about it. The second thing is, you know, it's not going to work. I mean, what is it we're trying to do? You know, when you get your vaccine, I've actually had my my vaccination this weekend. Right.
Excellent.
I was called in as an elderly person. You know?
That must have hurt.
But they said to you, don't assume it gives you absolute protection. We know it doesn't give protection against the South African variant and so on. So,
well, it does. No, it does. It stops you from. It does protect from getting seriously ill or death, which is rather crucial.
It doesn't give you absolute protection.
No, but it doesn't. No vaccine gives absolute protection to anyone for anything.
And that is my point. You've got to be very careful. If you start relying on the vaccine alone for you to protect you, and you give people a passport as well to go with it, how do you think they're going to behave? You know, when they carried out the studies of the vaccines and how they worked, they found that the first 7-8 days, your risk of getting infected went up. Mm. Now, why do you think that was? That was because people were assuming it worked straight away. And so you've got to be very, very careful of putting too much reliance on it. When we get to the summer, you know, we will all be able to relax this, and hopefully by the end of the summer we'll have vaccinated enough people to have herd immunity. Why are we talking about giving up our civil liberties to advance the relaxation by probably a few weeks?
Yeah, probably for a few weeks. Interesting how Julia Hartley Brewer interrupted Davis during that to strongly state that it does give you protection against severe disease. Brewer jumped in and said the virus, this South African variant and the Oxford jab, she said the Oxford jab will prevent you getting serious symptoms from the South African variant. I wonder, how does Julia Hartley Brewer know that? How does she know that? Julia Hartley Brewer, like myself, is a broadcast journalist. How can she know that the Oxford AstraZeneca jab prevents against severe symptoms from the South African variant? The answer is she doesn't. She's just reading a press release. They said it is so, therefore it must be so. Strange times. And yesterday, I wrote about this on the website today, richieallen.co.uk. Do check it out, please. Articles being uploaded there, posted there daily. On Times Radio over the weekend, King's College scientist, he's basically a professor of genetic epidemiology, Tim Spector, professor of genetic epidemiology. He was on Times Radio over the weekend and said while on there to presenters who didn't even blink, he said that big weddings and outdoor sports events might have restrictions imposed upon them for years to come. For years. He said, I can't see us suddenly having another Cheltenham Festival with no regulations again. I can't see us having massive weddings with people coming from all over the world. I think for the next few years, those days are gone. And on the distancing and the masks and the washing the hands, he said this is going to be with us indefinitely. I think we need to get used to that, and that will allow us to do the things we really want to do more easily and more readily. And that echoes was the Deputy Chief Medical Officer Jonathan Van Tam said late last year to the BBC. He said things like wearing masks in winter and distancing, these are things that we might see these becoming cultural changes in the future. Again, on Times Radio, nobody said anything. They just nod along. And when the guy gets to the end, it's like, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate that. Thanks for everything you're doing to keep us safe. And then they announce the guy's name and they let him go on his merry way. Teaching primary school children, 26 minutes past five. It is welcome to the program if you're just joining me. Teaching primary school children over Zoom isn't any picnic at all, according to Ruth, a primary school teacher. Here she explains it to BBC's Naga Munchetti. Listen carefully to this.
We've got lots of online lessons, but we also have lots of brain breaks where we do like just dances. We'll do like a couple bunch of sit-ups and how many we can do in a minute. We'll do some like would you rather questions. We'll do some drawing to try and distract them. But unfortunately, especially with young children, the second they're distracted by something like the TV coming on, I had one child the other day say, Miss, can I leave because I've got my favourite TV programme coming on. And they'd normally be in school, but it was about 5 seconds and then he left the Zoom call to go and watch his TV. So no matter how many things you do as a teacher and how you try to motivate these pupils, they are staring at a screen for 6 hours a day, Monday to Friday. And I think they're starting to get really, really tired. Like my back's hurting, my eyes are hurting, I'm becoming really tired. So I can't imagine, you know, what these children are feeling, especially not being able to go outside and play football with their friends at playtime and even on weekends to get rid of that energy. I think they're really struggling.
They're really struggling, she said. 5-6 hours a day staring at a screen 5 days a week, not being outside, not playing with their friends. It's really affecting them, she said. It's affecting me as well. This is what children are being exposed to now, not as we speak, but today when you were going about your business and I was going about my business, primary school children in this country were sitting in front of a screen trying to learn for hours. And she said one of them, or some of them, are just getting up and walking away and going to watch television.
What's the kickback if a child says, you know what, I'm going to go and watch TV, I'm not at this lesson?
Well, I've currently only got 3 students on this morning out of my normal 25.
Why?
And the problem, sometimes it's because parents can't be bothered to get up in the morning because they had a late night. Babies crying, so they don't come on till 10 o'clock instead of 9. Sometimes it's because they've forgotten something, the Wi-Fi connection's gone, mum's got to go to the shops and obviously can't leave daughter on her own, so she's got to go with her. So loads of children are sort of left, you know, they can't access it. And the problem is it's not their fault either. And the problem is we can't contact them and say, look, can you come online to school? And there's no consequences for it either. There's no fine for not turning up. It's just all there was, you know, there was some viable excuse and they can't come on.
There's no fine, she said, eh? Because fines, local authorities do attempt to fine parents when they don't bring their children to school, to the school building. But now children are learning from home, allegedly. It's a different matter entirely when they don't show up. It's unimaginably horrible, isn't it, to subject a child to that day in, day out. But there you are. Listen, it's coming up for 5:30. Well, it's 29 minutes past five. You are with the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live from Salford. It always is 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, Monday to Thursday, with me, Richie Allen. Tweet BBG Richie. It's at BBG Richie. And a lot of tweets have come in, so let me read them. Let me read them now. A few of them, anyway. Hi to Chris, who says, Richie, in Chris's opinion, Hartley Brewer is compromised now. Talk Radio, it seems, have cancelled the excellent Mike Yeadon, as have Twitter, ? His at name is not coming up. Somebody mentioned to me over the weekend that Mike Yeadon, former pharmaceutical industry worker, research and development, wasn't it, that sort of thing. Apparently he's been booted off of Twitter. That's not good. As for Mike Yeadon, way back when Mike Yeadon first surfaced, when he began tweeting, I invited him to come on this programme and he wasn't up for it. And that's because he's not stupid, because I had some questions for Mike Yeadon about his past and the things he was involved in. So he wisely avoided me. I don't have any interest in him, but at the same time, it's shocking if he's been banned from Twitter. He has expertise. He has worked in the industry. He's entitled to his opinion. As for his relationship with Talk Radio, I have no idea. I didn't even know he was a guest on Talk Radio. John says, Richie, my dad's tackled his own type 2 diabetes by cutting back on beer and sugar, having a healthier diet and hammering the exercise bike. He now looks like Clint Eastwood in Heartbreak Ridge. Good man. I like that. And Patricia Braunschweiler, how you doing, Patricia? Old friend of ours. Is it wrong to suggest that keeping people in quarantine and lockdown makes them easier to convince to have the vaccine to get back to some sort of normal life? Just wondering. Patricia, I think you've nailed it. I think you've nailed it. Absolutely. That's what lockdown after lockdown after lockdown is about. It is to beat people down, to destroy people psychologically so that they'll cry out for it. And I think on some level, I think it has succeeded. I did see some scepticism being expressed on social media today from people, and I think you might be onto something. But some people, and by people, I just mean account holders on Facebook and on Twitter, people I don't know personally, but they were saying today they don't believe the government when the government says the vaccine rollout is going swimmingly. The government says day in, day out, it's going brilliant, 10 million vaccinated now, 11 million vaccinated now, 12 million vaccinated now. Some of you don't believe them. Some of you believe that it's being more difficult, or it has proven to be more difficult for the government than the government is letting on, and that this is propaganda to encourage more people to have the jab. This is basically happy, crappy stuff, happy, crappy stuff. Oh, it's going fantastic. It's going brilliantly. When it isn't really. Now, to be fair, the people who tweeted such things offered no proof whatsoever. It was conjecture. But I understand why you might think that. I don't know. I really don't know. There has been a call today from the government. This is true. A call has been put out to over 70s not to wait for the phone call or for the knock on the door to tell them that they need to come for their vaccine. That if you're over 70, you should now be contacting your GP, your local health centre, to ask about getting your jab. I wonder about that. I don't know. Keep those tweets coming in at BBG Richie. We're going to hear from Luke now, in a moment, from Kate and Luke Cafe in Burnage. Big incident there yesterday where Luke was arrested and taken away, and it appeared from a video we saw that he was assaulted. He has continued to open his cafe in Burnage during this lockdown, despite warnings from the council and from the police. I caught up with him earlier on. We'll hear from him now in a moment. Hi to Chris. Hi to Scottish. Jono says, Richie, you haven't lived till you've had your parsnips buttered. Just ask Mrs. Slocum. I've never been a man for butter myself. Hi to Mark Wilde as well. And hi to Emma. Emma says, Richie, people who refuse the vaccine will be treated as social rejects, literally ostracised, says Emma. That might very well be the case, Emma. I suppose we're just going to have to watch this space, aren't we? We'll have to watch this space. Monday's Richie Allen radio programme. The time is 27 minutes to 6 o'clock. It is the 8th of February 2021. Dr. Vernon Coleman will join the programme in hour 2, as he ordinarily does on a Monday. Before that, though, very interesting conversation with a Manchester-based business owner. Why he's standing up to lockdown and continuing to open his business. You don't want to miss that. On the other side of this, AC/DC, Thunderstruck on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. The time is exactly 23 minutes to 6 o'clock. Let's move on. Lots to get through today. Lots to get through. Now, Luke and his wife, Kate, run the Kate and Luke Cafe in Burnage. They've had it since 2014. They have refused to close the business during this lockdown. Okay, and yesterday they were raided by the police and Luke was arrested. A video doing the rounds of the internet and posted by Daily Mail Online appears to show a police officer punching Luke. In the first lockdown, they did what they were asked to do. They sold takeaways and takeaways only, but they couldn't continue to do that. And since June, they've kept the business open. They've had some interference from the local authority. And in the last week or so, they've had an approach by the police. It all kicked off yesterday. I did put a link to the Daily Mail story on my website, richieallen.co.uk. Luke and Kate from the Kate and Luke Cafe in Burnage absolutely determined to keep their business open. I caught up with Luke this morning, and this is how that went. Pay close attention to this. Listen, first of all, thanks for taking the call today on your day off, Luke. I really appreciate that. Tell me about what happened yesterday lunchtime. What happened exactly?
What happened? We had about 50 of people, maybe 60. The cafe only got like 24 covers inside. Everything was fine. We're dead busy. People were laughing, smiling. We had the people from Wales, from London, from Derbyshire. Yesterday, on Saturday, for example, we had the people from Glasgow, from Liverpool, from London as well. Oh, amazing. And what happened yesterday at about, I don't know, 1:15, half one, something like that, the two police officers came in and they try and make me, they started harassing me. That's how I see it. They started harassing me, started saying silly things, you know, go outside. I was kicking them out. I was telling them, get the fuck. I'm quite a mouthy person.
Okay.
I was trying to kick them out of the premises. You know, let me do what I'm doing. They said, let's go outside for a talk. And eventually I gave up. I said, no problem, guys. I was going to let them in first and they closed the door behind them. But I said, no, no problem. I said, okay, no problem. They tricked me. The second I went outside, the guy that punched me, he grabbed my hand, he tried to cuff me. And after that, I don't know if you've seen the video, I was just trying to get him out of my, get me, because I wasn't fighting him at all. He didn't get any punch. He just...
You just wanted them to leave.
Yes,
to leave the premises.
Yes, he was harassing me at first. That was, he had the 6 police officers visit within the past 10 or since last week from Thursday.
And now it began, didn't it, Luke? For the listeners, they should know the story. It began 10 days before then, because you've continued to open your business during lockdown. Now, why have you continued to do that? The police say they're enforcing the guidelines. They've got to do that.
The thing is, with the police got nothing to do with the lockdown outdoor at all. That's not, the lockdown is not the police job. Police only supporting the council. That's all, everything is up to the council. They're the bosses when it comes to the lockdown. So every single restriction comes from the council. Police only supporting them, as in they're coming as the guards, that's all it is.
Yeah.
It's not a law. This lockdown is a joke. It's not a law at any time.
So why... Now, I'm not going to argue with that, because I did say to you earlier that I have a lot of sympathy for you. I do. And I think if I was in your position, I think I would be doing the same as you. But just to be balanced, right? The government, yes. The government says we've got a very deadly virus. It's important that we impose restrictions. Why have you continued to open in the meantime? Why?
Because I know for sure the government is lying to us.
How do you know that?
I don't know if you watch the internet. I don't know if you watch the YouTube. I don't know if you've heard of the doctors, the world-class doctors.
I have.
About 15,000 doctors signed a petition to broke the COVID rules all over the world. That's where I'm getting my information from. You see, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a specialist. I'm only a chef. I know how to run my business. That's my job. That's what I'm doing. But all the information I got is got from those smart people. I'm only repeating their words. And I really, really believe what they're saying is true. Instead of believing to Hancock, whoever you call him, saying, I just believe what they're saying, because I think that's an alternative source of information. It's more accurate than the one from the mass media.
Tell me about if you were forced to close, what would it mean for the business? I know, Luke, you've been there since 2014, Luke, is that right? So you've been there quite a long time. And if you had to close, what would happen?
If I have to close the cafe, I can survive for another maybe month, maybe 6 months. After that, I'm losing the business. I'm probably losing the house because I won't be able to repay my mortgage.
So in six months, Luke, the business would be gone.
In about 2 months' time.
And you would lose your home too.
Yeah, because you see, my mortgage is £800, £750 exactly.
Yeah.
Because I've got only insurance. I've got two little boys. One is 9 years old. One is 12 years old. And, you know, we need to make living. We went on the first lockdown. We went on the full lockdown, as I said, doing takeaway, but we're losing 85% to 90% of income.
So during the first,
I couldn't make a payment of the bills.
This is important. You obeyed the first lockdown, and
I stuck to the first lockdown.
That's what I mean. You stuck to it, and you just did takeaway, but you were losing an enormous amount of revenue?
85 to 90%.
And that's you couldn't sustain that.
I couldn't afford it. I couldn't carry on like that anymore. So when it comes to June, I've just opened it, and then since the 15th of June, we are open as normal. The council only just noticed that last Thursday.
And tell me this, Luke, when you explain to the council, look, I must open, because if I don't open, I'm going to lose my home, I'm going to lose everything.
They all say, we are in this together, and they don't care about it.
And has the government given you or other cafe owners like you some support? Have they offered you a financial incentive to keep the business closed?
When it comes to us, we have claimed for the furlough for the first 3 months, because I was working by myself, because it was that quiet, really. I've claimed for the furlough for the first, 4 months, end of March, April, May and June for my wife. That was £568 per month. So we got about £1,600-1,700, something like that.
Yeah.
And now we just claimed for another two furloughs, just a recent for November and December, because it was dead quiet. So my wife was working. And that's all it had.
And of course,
about £2,300 for the past 11 months.
And the furlough money isn't free either, is it? It has to be paid back eventually, so it isn't free money from the government.
The furlough? No, furlough is a free... Oh, yeah, in the taxes, yes, of course, you're absolutely right.
You have to pay it back, ultimately. Eventually. Yeah, absolutely right. And so about 10 days ago then, last Thursday week, you announced that you were going to open up and you invited people to come down. And that's...
No, it wasn't that. I didn't speak to anyone. I wasn't asked to anyone. We were just open since 15th of June as normal.
Yeah, yeah.
Until last Thursday when the council came in, they wanted to close down or start doing the way they wanted. I said no. And they will keep harassing me every 2 days with the random police officers, with the random people sending from the council, told me to stop close the business and stop being open.
And that's
if they couldn't do it, yes, they've been times, they didn't make anything, they're bringing me different fines. At the moment, I've got one letter of a £1,000 fine, there's another one on £2,000 fine, and there's another letter for the closure of business. Now we're just ignoring them, because they couldn't do anything, because those letters mean absolutely nothing. They're absolutely use of paper. So what they've done, they just harassed me, they made me to go outside, they start the fight, and that's what happened last night.
And yesterday you were very, very busy. You said that because the first incident was last Thursday week when the council came around, and this of course went online. It ended up on YouTube, didn't it? It ended up on video sharing sites and on social media. So that was last Thursday week. So yesterday, people turned up from everywhere, didn't they? You mentioned
they turned up from all over
the country to support, basically. And what about local businesses, Luke? Are local businesses supportive of you? And if not, why not? Why are local businesses not doing the same thing as you, opening up?
Because people are scared. People don't know their rights. Because the massive propaganda goes through the social media, makes brainwashing people. And people just don't know. When I was speaking to them, I said, don't worry, guys, nothing's going to happen. They said, I'm talking crap.
Yeah, the guidelines.
Don't understand that.
The guideline. I did read a very interesting piece in the Telegraph newspaper. The guidelines.
Oh, there we go.
Well, the guidelines are guidelines. They're not enforceable by law. Most of them are not enforceable by law. So yesterday afternoon, Luke, you attempted to get the police officers to leave the cafe, and outside they grabbed you and one of them punched you. What happened after that? I mean, presumably you were taken down to the police station. What happened then?
They took me to Cheadle police station, Cheadle Hume.
Cheadle, yeah.
They took me there. I was resisting everything for the next 3 hours. I was calling them Nazi. I didn't want to cooperate with them at any point, because that's what they're doing. And then after 3 hours, I had an interview with the solicitor over the phone. You know, the typical speech, blah, 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 blah. And then went back, and then they took my fingerprints, they took a photo of me. And then when I had an interview with the police officer again, I gave all the statement what I wanted to do it. Some of the questions I didn't answer because I didn't have to. And I'm waiting for them to go to the court. I'm 2 weeks from tomorrow.
You'll be in court 2 weeks from tomorrow. That's going to be interesting, isn't it, Luke?
And you will.
And in the meantime, you're going to keep opening up Kate and Luke's cafe,
absolutely.
Is that right?
Every day. I'm going to, do you know what? Because they destroyed my trousers, they gave me something different. Because I was arrested just with a T-shirt, they gave me like a crappy, shitty jumper, and they literally kicked me out of the police station, and I had to find a way to back home by myself. Without any money, without a mobile phone, because I didn't have any, just like that, at 12 o'clock, midnight on Sunday.
This morning, basically.
The good thing is, there was a good police officer that I was talking to in a prison, so he gave me the leave home.
They're not all bad, Luke. They're not all bad, right?
You see, not all of them are bad. Some of them are really, really, really good. If you speak to them, you know, they will be fine. I was spoke to some surgeon as well, and he was almost start crying, almost, when I talked to him, what is going to happen? Because see, those people, they're reading those conspiracy theories, but they don't want to believe it. That's scared that people don't want to believe that's going to happen at any point.
Can I ask you this? And I meant it when I said that my opinions, I would share your point of view, but let me ask you this. What if you're wrong, Luke? Do you leave any room for the possibility that you might be wrong, and that by
if
opening
wrong,
the cafe,
I mean, it's only me. Not really stupid. I'm just being brainwashed by the. I don't know, but I don't think so. You see, I don't really see the point. Why would some doctors, virologists, professors, can stand up and say this is bullshit, this is lying?
Thousands.
Why would they do that?
Thousands of them. I've had them.
What's the purpose of it?
I've interviewed them on this program. They've been on with me, Martin Kulldorff, Sucharit Bhakti, all of the Barrington scientists. I've had several of them on this program. I agree with you, it's terrible. But we don't see these scientists on the BBC, Luke, do we? We don't see them.
No, because the BBC, they are the mainstream media. They're owned by the different, by the very rich people, and only put on the TV what they got told to do it. You know, which is alternative sources of the media, which is like a Facebook or a YouTube, and then other platforms. That's when the free people, use this one as a kind of news. We stopped watching social media. I've not watched TV for 15 years.
Yeah. And what about, if you don't mind me asking, you can tell me to fake off if you want, but what about Kate? What about your wife? How does she feel about this, Luke?
So what was your question?
What does Kate think about all of this? How does she deal with it?
My wife is supporting me 100%. She thinks in exactly the same way.
So you're totally united, which is important, right?
Yes. But see, the thing is, I'm the chatterbox. She stayed behind there. Because we've got the kids, you know. If I don't mind to go to jail or suffer or wherever they want to do it, I don't want to know my wife do it. So my wife is staying behind me, but she's 100% supporting me. We've pretty much everything gone.
What about, let me ask you this finally, what about, like, you're open again tomorrow, right? So you'll open up tomorrow. Yes. Do you ask your customers to distance or to wear the masks or anything like that?
Oh, no. There was olden days cafe. There was no restriction. There was no even one picture, even one photo, no 2 meters, nothing, no posters, nothing to do with the COVID. I absolutely obeyed that. There's no even hand sanitizer inside. There's no wind blow, nothing like that. The COVID-19 is just a purely propaganda of the mainstream media and the government.
So walking into your cafe tomorrow, for me, if I turned up tomorrow, it's like walking back into January 2020. It's like it never happened.
Yeah, basically, that's what it looks like. That's where we go.
Oh, Luke, I think you're great. I shouldn't be saying that. I should be objective here. But ultimately, I do, you know, I do see things as you see them. Before I let you go, I know you've got things to do. It's your day off as well. Remind us of when you're in court. You said it's 2 weeks. Is that 2 weeks from today, Luke?
From tomorrow.
From tomorrow, is it? Well, look, I hope it goes well for you. Will you be representing yourself, or have you got a solicitor?
Do you know what? I've got no idea. At the moment, I'm representing myself, but we're having a meeting in the cafe in about half an hour with some solicitors, and they're going to help me. They said, I spoke to them already about an hour ago. They said, don't worry, Luke, we sort that out for you.
It's insane, Luke. When you think about it, it's insane. The government is asking you to destroy your financial future, to ruin your business and lose your house just so that somebody doesn't get a virus. It's insane, isn't it? It's insane.
You see, I spent on that cafe seven years in August. We spent 25,000 pounds on that business. for the first 3 years, for the first year, we're working 7 days a week, literally 7 days a week, having 5 days off at Easter, 5 days off at the Christmas time. We're working from 7 o'clock in the morning to 2, and then we'll be coming back from 5 o'clock to 10. I've got the license. There was a restaurant as well. We did that for a whole year. The second and the third year, we were working 7 days a week, but only had a cafe from 7 o'clock till 2 p.m. Till 2 p.m. You only just recently, 3 years ago, we only decided to have 1 day off because, you know, we start coming down, we paid all our debts and things like that, and we start leaving. The minute we start leaving, there was a COVID-19 came out. This destroys everything.
You've put your, you and Kate have put your heart and soul into the business, right?
It's my baby. We're here every day. I know people by their names. I know people's stories. I know their lives. I know the people's children, husbands. I've been on a few funerals of my customers when they passed away. It's like my new home. People coming in for the chat, you know, lonely people, elderly people, because they got no one else to open their mouth. And I was supporting them, you know, the place to come in, because 11 months without speaking right now is something bad. I was supporting this local community. They know me. All those people know me.
Your business is an important place in the community. People get to go, have a cup of tea, have something to eat, find out the news, learn what's going on. These are important places, Luke, right? Listen, I want to wish you and Kate all the very best.
Thank you so much.
Do come back on the programme and tell us in the next week or two how you're getting on. And I wish you all the very best, Luke.
Thank you so much. But then don't forget, you got my mobile phone number, don't you?
I have your number.
Perfect. So if you need anything, please ring me on my mobile, because the landline is quiet now. I can hear you properly, so no problem. But when it's going to be busy or after 2 o'clock, I'm at home. So my mobile phone, that's the best way to contact me.
Cheers, Luke. I really appreciate that. All the best.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That was Luke there. He and his wife, Kate, run Kate and Luke's Cafe in Burnage. And that's made national news today because he has refused to lock down. After the first lockdown was lifted in the summer, he's opened up ever since. And amazingly, even though they imposed lockdowns before Christmas, the local authority didn't realise that he was carrying on with his business. They contacted him about 10 or 11 days ago and told him to stop trading, and he didn't. And yesterday, with about 50 or 60 people there inside the restaurant, 25 covers, he said to me, I think, he's got 25 covers, people sitting outside, the police turned up and told him to close. And when he didn't, he was arrested. We didn't get too much into the alleged assault because, well, there are claims and counterclaims there. You have to be a bit careful about that. But there he is anyway. The cafe is in Burnage. He's in court 2 weeks from tomorrow. And he said to me there that he plans on opening his business tomorrow and carrying on as normal, despite the fines. The fines don't mean anything, he said, because if he closes and stops within 2 months, he'll lose everything, the business. And he, of course, said to us that he will lose his home as well. This is Monday's Richie Allen Radio Show, back in a minute.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
You are very welcome back to the program. A lot of comment on Twitter on the discussion I had there with Luke, the cafe owner, or the co-owner of the cafe. Daniel says, what a great guy Luke is. This is Daniel Shane. How you doing, Daniel? The cafe owner is a hero. How you doing, Charlie Stevenson? Charlie says, Richie, I'm sure the listeners would toss in for Luke's legal fees. Thanks for that, Charlie. Katrina says, Richie, the world needs an army and armies of people like Luke. Only then will we wipe this madness out. Tell him God bless him. Linda says, Richie, Luke has got his head screwed on. Brave, sensible and outspoken. Disgusting the way he's been treated. Good luck to him and to his family. A lot of comments, a lot of similar comments. I don't see anybody criticising Luke, not on my timeline anyway, for opening his business. Gail says, good man, Luke, go support him if you live near to him, says Gail. He's in Burnage. I'm in Salford. He's across the city. Might take a trip over on Friday. I don't present the Richie Allen radio show on Friday. I think I might pop over on Friday. Hi to my friend Spiro Skouras. How you doing, Spiro? Great journalist, activistpost.com. And Spiro, of course, can be found on YouTube at Spiro Skouras. I've just seen your emails, my friend. Don't ever apologise for bombarding me. Always full of important information, is Spiro. He sent me some fascinating stories from CBS and other news outlets in the United States about vaccine reactions. They are pouring in, Spiro. I'm going to be speaking with the one and only Dr. Vernon Coleman in a few minutes' time about the emerging reports of vaccine injury and death. So thanks so much for that. I really appreciate it. It is 6 o'clock, or nearly 6 o'clock anyway. While we wait for the call from an old man in a chair, and I don't say that with any disrespect, it is the moniker he has dubbed himself with. It's the name he gave himself. The Dr. Vernon Coleman will be with me in a few minutes' time. I've got another tune lined up, so I am. It's Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. This is Learning to Fly. Tom Petty, as produced by Jeff Lynne. You probably knew that. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe you don't think it matters. Right. Learning to Fly on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I'm trying to think now. Yes, Learning to Fly is on Into the Great Wide Open, isn't it? It is. I know. A couple of months ago when I played a Tom Petty song, I asked the same question. I know. It's early onset of dementia. And I don't mean to be insensitive now to anybody who's dealing with early onset dementia. Don't get too upset about that, you know. We are allowed to joke from time to time. We are allowed to be self-deprecating from time to time. Without further ado, let's welcome back to the programme. He needs little introduction, but I do want to tell you that two e-books at the moment, COVID-19, The Greatest Hoax in History, and Proof That Face Masks Do More Harm Than Good, they are free to read. It would do no harm whatsoever to send a link to those books to people who might be on the fence. They might be a bit concerned about what's going on. They might be looking for a bit of alternative information. Those books are at vernoncoleman.com. But if you have a problem getting through vernoncoleman.com, I have shared links to those books, as has thelightpaper.co.uk, thelightpaper.co.uk. Let's welcome back to the programme the best-selling author and former GP, our friend Dr. Vernon Coleman. Vernon, welcome back.
Hello, Richie. How you doing?
I'm really well, Vernon. Thanks for coming on. And it's really timely you coming on, because my friend Spiro Skouras, who's a journalist of great principle, and I've great respect for him, he's been sending me links to stories that are emerging today. I know that you are keeping a fastidious record of reports of vaccine injuries, COVID vaccine injuries. More stories are emerging out of the US today, CBS News. There's a kind of a feeling that the floodgates might be about to open with regards to these injury stories. What do you think?
They're opening. They are open and they're getting wider. Before I go on, that was an absolutely brilliant interview with that wonderful guy, Luke, just before 6 o'clock. Incredible. Congratulations, Richie. That was proper radio. You don't get much of that anymore. The vaccine disaster is growing, and it's going to get much, much worse. Can I just tell you a story? I had my invitation to turn up for my jab a few days ago. Now, you will be absolutely amazed to hear that I said no thank you. I don't really want to. Thank you very much. I don't want stuff made out of Agent Orange, napalm and paraquat. So because I'd said no, I became some sort of non-person. So they sent me a booklet, which, to be honest, you'd be better off reading the leaflet that comes with the next duvet. This is the booklet that is being sent to punters like me who said, no thanks, I don't want your vaccine. On page 6 of the booklet called A Guide for Older Adults, I assume I just got the guide for older adults because I'm old. Anyway, on page 6, it says, and I quote, the COVID-19 vaccination will reduce the chance of you suffering from COVID-19 disease, close quotes. Now, I thought this was a bit amazing because the WHO, which the government follows blindly when it comes to mask wearing, sorry, I didn't mean the pun, they say something very different. And then later on in the same booklet on page 11, the NHS says, open quotes, we do not yet know whether it will stop you from catching and passing on the virus.
That's right.
So they tell me, first of all, it's going to reduce my chance of suffering from it. Then 5 pages later, they say, well, we don't know yet whether it's going to stop you. What the hell are they doing? And then on page, there's another one, on page 6. This is why I get so cross about all the false information that's being given out. People are being asked to make a hugely important decision without any information. The government is lying. Listen to this. Open quotes. This is back on page 6. My friendly NHS booklet, produced by Public Health England, which, as you know, is financed in part by Bill Gates.
It is.
This is where my little booklet says, open quotes, the vaccine has been shown to be effective and no safety concerns were seen in studies of more than 20,000 people. Now, putting aside the word effective, because that gets us back to the getting into prison and picking up the soap without bending down, as far as the government's concerned, let's look at the safety stuff. And as you said, the amount of information about the various vaccines is growing by the minute. We have a thing on the website. On my website, I have a list of people dying, horrendous side effects. But the figures, you don't need stories of individuals. You do, but I'm just going to look at the figures. The CDC in the United States, before Christmas, produced a report which listed the number of people who'd had the vaccine at 112,000 and the number of health impact events at 3,100. Now, that's 2.79%. So if 60 million people in the UK had it, that would be 1.67 million. So badly affected, according to the CDC, that they couldn't work, perform normal daily activities and would need help from a doctor or a nurse. Now, that was before Christmas, presumably before the Public Health England actually got round to publishing their wretched little leaflet. But it's got a lot worse. In America, the National Vaccines Information Center has recently reported 501 deaths so far and 10,748 other injuries.
Is it definitely attributing the 501 deaths to the vaccine? Is it blaming the vaccine for those deaths?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
And that was before the end of January. And in America, they say that they only get details of about 1% of problems after vaccinations. Now, let's look at the UK, because I got yesterday UK government figures. This is UK government figures for vaccine damage for the Pfizer vaccine. Just the Pfizer vaccine. Overall, more than a third of the people having the vaccine have a reaction, which is a bit different to the government's bland, oh, it's all right, there's not any need to worry, you might get a little bit of an ache in your arm for 2 minutes, but don't worry. According to the UK government figures, the Pfizer vaccine in the UK is already responsible for 107 deaths and 49,472 people injured. That's in the first 6 weeks of vaccinating. 13 people had heart attacks, 4 had miscarriages. Though the World Health Organization, of course, as you know, has warned that pregnant women shouldn't have the vaccine in the first place. So yeah. What the hell is going on there? Heaven knows. 58 had facial paralysis, 14 had general paralysis, 34 had seizures, 665 had psychiatric problems. The authorities are so well aware of this that they're monitoring pilots and air traffic controllers for 48 hours after vaccination before giving them a clear to do what they do. They aren't monitoring train or bus drivers or surgeons. They all get the standard 15 minutes. The figures, all the figures for these horrible, horrible results, again, they're on my website and they'll be on your website when you updated it.
Yeah.
Even a BBC reporter trained in denying and suppressing the truth could find the results on either of our websites. This isn't a vaccination program. It's genocide. Hundreds and hundreds of people are dying already. And let me tell you...
Can I ask you a question just before you go on? And I don't want to interrupt your flow. And the reason I don't want to do that, dear listener, is because the mainstream media pumps out propaganda 24/7. It never invites the likes of Dr. Vernon Coleman on, ever. So I let him just do what he does, because it's important that we get that balance. But I want to ask you this. If these numbers are real, and I know you're not making them up, I know they're official numbers, it stands to reason, you said the floodgates are opening, the media will not be able to ignore this then, will it? At some stage, the mainstream media is going to have to dip a toe in these figures and ask what's going on.
Well, people are going to know people who've died, aren't
yeah.
they? People are going to know people who are seriously paralysed. And all these stories are coming out. They're all on my website. The ones that have managed to get on the internet are not... Awful lot of brave people, and people who work in care homes, awful lot of brave people are releasing information about all these terrible things that are happening. It's not a vaccination program, it's genocide.
You call it genocide, and I know you're just going to go on again, and I am going to shut up and let you get on. But on the vaccine and the two doses, just as I'm speaking with you now, my colleague Spiro has sent me a link to a Fox News story out of New York. Fox are finding in New York that more side effects are being reported after the second dose. Why might the second dose be more dangerous?
Yes, the second dose is more dangerous. It's causing a hell of a lot more trouble. It's the pathogenic priming. It's all... I'll come all onto that in a minute because I'll lose it. But yes, the second dose is much more dangerous. And even to make things even worse, the UK government is doing a trial which they're spending 7 million quid on, which would be much better spent on looking on doing what I originally suggested, which is comparing 20,000 people who had the vaccine and 20,000 people who didn't, but the same sort of ages, but compare them. 7 million quid, and I heard that they're just using 800 people to find if they can give a different second dose. So you can have an AstraZeneca and a Pfizer mixed or a whatever you like. A Woolworths vaccine mixed with a Marks and Spencer's vaccine. Yeah. Heaven knows what. The Americans went absolutely apeshit when they heard this. They said, this is crazy. You can't go mixing vaccines. British government is. And now they're doing a little trial because they say they think it'll make it even better if you have two different ones. No wonder the government's delighted. The UK government is saving 600 million in pension payments because of all the old people who were murdered in the last 12 months. And the Financial Times today had a report that COVID-19 deaths and presumably the vaccine deaths will cut 60 billion quid from corporate pension costs. And then people say, why are they doing this? You don't really have to ask. There's an awful lot of very simple answers. And all the figures I've given you so far are just the Pfizer jab. They haven't got round to the AstraZeneca jab figures yet, and that's being given to over 65s in the UK. But it's not recommended for over 65s in other countries. Naturally, I have to say, the Medicines Agency and Public Health England would disagree with me. But if they disagree with me, they're disagreeing with their own government. The UK government's got these figures, but the Medicines Agency and Public Health England are both saying that it's a coincidence if it rains and you get wet. They're both saying the vaccination has nothing whatsoever to do with whether or not you've had a bad effect or you've suddenly gone paralyzed or you've died. They're saying these are all coincidences. If you die within 28, 60 days of testing positive, and I've got some amazing new stuff about that, which I'd like to talk about in a minute. But if you die within 28, 60 days, whatever it is that week, then you died of it. And there was a horrendous piece which I've written about on my website that was in the Telegraph saying there's no difference between with and of.
I can't believe there is.
Rubbish appearing in the mass market media nowadays.
Yeah.
But both, remember, both the Medicines Agency and Public Health England have received huge sums of money from Bill Gates, who's got a big shareholding in the Pfizer vaccine, and picked up the other day some information that you'll be delighted to hear, because I'm sure you've got a couple of million in Pfizer.
I wish. Well, I don't wish, but if I did, yeah, go on.
Pfizer expects to generate $15 billion, or a quarter of its total revenue, from sales of its COVID-19 vaccine. And here's the killer. They say they expect there's going to be a long-lasting need for COVID-19 vaccines to combat new variants and boost waning immune responses. So Bill Gates is going to be making tons of money out of his Pfizer vaccine shares for many years to come. And the same thing that's happening in the UK and America is happening everywhere. Look at Gibraltar. The fact checkers say that the deaths have got nothing to do with the vaccine. They're just because the moon's moved about or something. But look at the figures for Gibraltar. 5 people died of COVID in January and 2 in December. Then in Gibraltar, they started vaccinating on the 10th of January. Over the weekend of 16th and 17th of January, 13 people died.
Yeah, yeah.
And by the 18th of January, there were 45 deaths. By the 2nd of February, there'd been 79 deaths. 2 people died in December. And then all of a sudden, half of Gibraltar's dying. And coincidentally, they just happened to have the vaccine.
Tell me this, Vernon. Am I right in understanding that it is not recommended that somebody who dies with COVID goes for an autopsy? Is that right? They don't get one?
They weren't doing autopsies right from the beginning because the pathologist said it was far too dangerous to do an autopsy on somebody who might possibly have died of the flu, sorry, of COVID. Except they were just calling it coronavirus right at the beginning. But they said it was far too dangerous. So as far as I'm aware, they're still not doing autopsies on people who've died with or of COVID-19, which means, presumably, that they can't really do coroner's inquests.
Yeah, we touched on this a little bit last week, because if I had a relative, a senior relative, who had retired in Spain or in Gibraltar and died shortly after having the vaccine, I would be screaming bloody murder for the autopsy and an inquest. But I think you're right, they're not doing them.
No, because you want to know, because if somebody has terminal prostate cancer or has a serious heart attack and they happen to test positive within 28 days, and they probably would have been tested when they went into hospital, then they'll be put down as having died with. Yeah. And as happened with Captain Tom, the papers, quite a few of the papers ran stories saying he died of COVID. A few were honest and said he died with. And as I said, the Telegraph had this horrendous feature the other day saying there's no difference, they're the same. Of course there's a difference. If you get hit on the head with a hammer and you die and you have been tested positive, they will put you down if you reported in the wrong paper, you'll be put down as having died of COVID. It's crazy. Absolute madness. And this second dose thing is going to cause worse problems. Sorry, I've gone back to the vaccine.
Yeah.
All over the place.
No, it's good. No, it is. It's good. No, we're with you. We know you're jumping around a bit, but that's fine. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah, I've just got so much stuff in my head. I've been reading all this stuff. And the problem with the second one is going to be after that, when the patient who's had the vaccine or person who's had the vaccine comes into contact with what's called a wild coronavirus. By that, they just mean one out in the community. And then there's the problem that you can get a cytokine storm or pathogenic priming, and the immune system overreacts wildly. The whole thing goes mad, And that's when there's going to be a lot of deaths. And the interesting thing is that patients have not been warned about this problem. If there's any honest reporters left at the BBC, which is the most disgusting and disreputable organisation in the history of the media, they will find evidence in the International Journal of Clinical Practice for sometime in the autumn of 2020. Damn it, I've forgotten. The paper's entitled something about informed consent disclosure to vaccine trial subjects. People are not being warned that the elderly, I'll put the dates of that paper on my website. It's the International Journal of Clinical Practice, I remember. The elderly, no one is being warned that you can get this pathogenic priming problem. And it's the elderly and those with poor immune systems who are particularly likely to be killed. And what, pray, is going to give you a poor immune system? Well, oddly enough, there are three things which are particularly likely to give you a poor immune system, apart from a serious health problem, which does that. There are three things which give everybody a poor immune system. Now, one is being isolated from other people, because then you don't get the normal immune developments that people get. I can't think what would isolate one from other people, but I'm sure you can think of something.
Yeah, we can.
The second, getting enough sunshine, because that reduces your vitamin D and that reduces your immune system responses. And the third thing is wearing anything over your face. If you were stupid enough to wear something over your mouth and nose, for example, which impeded your breathing, then you would have hypoxia and hypercapnia, and you would have a much poorer immune system. So if you were in the unfortunate position where you were isolated from other people, didn't get exposure to any sunshine, and wore something over your mouth and nose, you would have a rotten immune system, and you would be particularly likely to die because of the COVID-19 vaccine. But you won't die just yet, because you'll need to come into contact with the virus, which will probably mean in the autumn, when the mutated virus strains are going to become apparent. And if I were offering any financial advice, I would say go and buy shares in The Undertakers, because I bet Bill Gates has got a nice big Undertaker firm going. Because by the autumn, my forecast is that the number of deaths caused by the vaccine is going to exceed the number of deaths caused by COVID-19. And all those deaths are going to be blamed on COVID-19.
On variants.
They're already blaming COVID-19 for the mask deaths, the bacterial pneumonia, which we know is a major international epidemic. Well, a pandemic, obviously.
Yeah.
They're being blamed, the COVID-19 is being blamed for all the lockdown deaths. They say, oh, there aren't any lockdown deaths. Those are all COVID. No, they are not. People are dying. They're not doing operations on children with cancer. They're not doing operations on tons of people. The number of people who are being diagnosed with all sorts of cancers are dramatically lower because they're not. The hospital departments are shut.
Now, an NHS England guy was on the Maher show, as far as I remember yesterday, and the same guy was on BBC Radio this morning. His name escapes me now for a moment, but he said they're back up to speed now with operations. There is some issue with dental procedures, but as far as urgent cancer treatments and other, you know, immediate operations, they're back where they were before the pandemic. That's what they're claiming anyway.
Well, and it's a very nice day outside and lovely and warm, and I would get you there out and enjoy the sunshine.
Right. I've got to say what they're saying, otherwise I won't be doing my job. Yeah.
I'm just looking at bare things like statistics and the government statistics for the number of people who are being tested for breast cancer or other types of cancer. And if you don't do the screening and the testing, then you are not going to pick up the people who've got the cancers that need to be treated. And since the last I heard, the government had admitted that they're about 2 years behind with testing, screening programs and so on, they can't possibly be up to date. They may well be up to date with the people that they had last March. And if they are up to date with the people that they had last March, and you're sitting in your deck chair enjoying the wonderful sunshine in Salford, then I will be very impressed, because there were millions of patients behind the last time I looked.
You make a good point. You make a good point on the testing. There was a cancer charity lady on, again, it must have been Sky News over the weekend, and she said they're terrified at the knowledge that people with early signs of cancers, whether it's a little lump or whether it's a pain in a place they shouldn't have a pain, she said that they know that these people are not going for tests. She would endorse what you said. She said, we know this, and this is a huge problem.
And the hospitals are not seeing as many patients because they're socially distancing all the beds. You see, that's the problem at the moment, is you see that idiots like Marr at the BBC will do interviews with the people that they want to do interviews with, who have the view that they want to project, because the BBC is just a huge and disgusting propaganda machine. But why didn't, or I'm sorry, I didn't watch the programme, did Marr have someone who would express my sort of point of view?
Go on. Well, there's two answers. And it's 100, it's 100 to 1 on. Of course not. Never. I haven't seen. Marr one time interviewed Carl Hennigan. One time, I believe. And that must have been 6 months ago. No, the BBC is no chance.
I think he's been discredited now. Everybody who speaks out is immediately demonised, discredited, has their Wikipedia turned upside down.
You're a denier, Vernon. You're a denier. They've equated people, you said this last week, they've coined phrases like climate change denier and now COVID denier. And they say COVID denier in such a way that makes it sound like they think you're dirt under their shoes if you're a COVID denier. Yeah, they've tried to destroy Hennigan and Sunetra Gupta at Oxford and the Barrington doctors, yourself. Yeah, this is how it is now.
I signed the Barrington. And a lot of them you don't hear of anymore because these people's careers have been destroyed. And the BBC always gets very snotty about this and says, oh, well, these people, these doctors and stuff, they're doing it for money or whatever. I don't know of any doctor who's been speaking out for money. They've been speaking out of belief and passion, and they have been destroying their own careers like I have. I mean, my career's trashed, so I don't care anymore. I'm just interested in telling the truth. The BBC, however, all their reporters are getting big fat salaries, so they're being paid to tell big porky pies. I call them pseudo-journalists because they always call people like me pseudo-scientists because they don't agree with what we say. It's libelous, but that's what they call us. So as far as I'm concerned, they're all pseudo-journalists because they just tell big porky pies. No, they don't. They lie. They tell big lies. They suppress the truth. Anyway, forget that. The important other thing that really needs to be discussed is something that most people seem to have forgotten, which is the PCR tests, because we've almost accepted it. We've almost put up with them because they've become part of the system, even though we know that the tests are useless and they're using... the NHS, for example, is using 40 cycles when even the World Health Organization says they should only use 20-25. So the BBC's, the British government's deliberately ignoring the guidelines. It's just barking. The point is that the amount of money and effort being spent on promoting the PCR tests is phenomenal. Did you know that Deloitte, the government's got 900 consultants from Deloitte, and it's paying £1,000 a day each. That's £900,000 a day for these people to help manage the test and trace system. We're much better off if they spent it on dentists. And had access to a dentist for 2 years. But the problem is that most people have accepted the PCR testing, and there's been talk about people having them every day, including children. What no one ever mentions is that the PCR tests are dangerous, not just because they cause excruciating pain, and because there's an enormous amount of confusion about how far up the swab should go. In Australia, they say it should only go up a few centimetres up the nostril. But the nasopharyngeal swabs go much further, and the United States Department of Health and Human something Services says that the swab should reach, now this is so awful, should reach a depth equal to the distance from your nostrils to the outer opening of your ear.
Jesus.
Okay? Now use your fingers to go from your nose to your ear, right?
Yeah, I'm there.
That Christ. Is how far up your nose they're supposed to push the swab, right? That terrifies me, and I'll tell you why it terrifies me. In October last year, I reported on a case where a healthy woman had noticed cerebrospinal fluid pouring out of her nose after she'd had a PCR test. Now, this really isn't something you want happening. She was 40 and healthy. She had the PCR test, and she went to the doctor and said, my nose keeps running, and I've got a headache, and my neck's a bit stiff. This was reported in a Journal of American Medical Association, one of their journals, Otolaryngology. I'll put the details on my website. And the surgeons tested, or the doctors tested this fluid running down her nose because they thought it looked a bit iffy, and it was cerebrospinal fluid. That's the stuff that protects your brain, and you want it protecting your brain. You want it swirling round and round, providing a nice cushion. The pharyngeal test, the nasopharyngeal swab, had gone up there and punctured the membrane, and the fluid was coming down. Odd, single odd case? No, it wasn't a single odd case. There was one accepted for the Medical Journal of Australia, which I've seen. It hasn't been published yet, as far as I think, but it was accepted for the Medical Journal of Australia on the 4th of December. 67-year-old, healthy woman. She, too, had the symptoms of meningitis, and she had cerebrospinal fluid coming down her nose after a COVID-19 test. And they say, the authors of that paper, now this is absolutely staggering, because the authors of that paper say that the techniques for deep nasal and for nasopharyngeal swabs can be easily confused. And I wrote down the instructions that they put, and they say, open quotes, it involves swab insertion into the nasal cavity at a plane. I'm saying this because this is what unqualified people are being expected to do. The Army, Boy Scouts, everybody who's doing these tests. They aren't using doctors and nurses because there aren't enough of them. They're all doing vaccinations. And did you know, by the way, that GPs who are getting £12 something for giving a jab can claim another 10 quid if the patient's in a home somewhere? Anyway, sorry. This is part of the instructions that they give to the Boy Scouts and the squaddies who are doing the tests, okay? Open quotes. It involves swab insertion into the nasal cavity at a plane between the opening of the nose and the external ear canal on the patient, which can be considered as the horizontal plane for the purpose of relationship to surface anatomy. This will allow the swab to be inserted parallel to the nasal floor, which would avoid injury to the middle turbinates.
Wow.
Swabs inserted in an upward orientation into the nasal cavity, greater than 30 degrees, not only have a risk of failing to achieve an adequate diagnostic sample, but also puts the patient at greater risk of injury to the thin and delicate areas of the skull base, attachment of middle turbinate and cribriform plate, which are superior and anterior to the sphenoid sinus ostium. Close quotes.
What the hell is that? What the hell is that all about?
If you think that the person who's putting the swab up your nose has read that and understood might like them to go ahead. If you think they probably or possibly haven't read that, then you shouldn't let them come within a yard of your nose with a swab, because you might have your cerebrospinal fluid pouring down your nose. The people who wrote this paper concluded, and I quote, we urge that, and I remind you, this was from the Medical Journal of Australia, in case the BBC thinks I'm making this up. They say, the surgeons write, we urge that this angle is not exceeded, this is the 30-degree angle, when performing diagnostic tests, as it places the patient at greatest risk of serious adverse events. Now, for people, for medically qualified people, there are proper diagrams and training for this. An awful lot of the people doing this test watched a YouTube video. It's madness, Richie. In Australia, a three-year-old boy bled to death after a nasal test. In Saudi Arabia, these are all in the journals. The fact-checkers can find all these quite easily. In Saudi Arabia, an 18-month-old child died after a test swab broke inside his nasal cavity. These are not safe procedures, and they're being done by people who understand as much about what they're doing as I do about, I don't know, nuclear submarines.
Nuclear submarines, and they're doing it for a test that's redundant. I want to move. I know that there is more you want to say on injuries, and I want to get back to that. There's a couple of other things I wanted to mention quickly before then. Before I do that, VernonColeman.com is Vernon's website. This, you're listening to Dr. Vernon Coleman, the multiple best-selling author and former GP. And by the way, he was being very self-deprecating earlier on about his career being destroyed. Vernon left medicine of his own volition. I've seen one or two tweets, nasty tweets from time to time, people suggesting that he was forced out of medical practice. He was not. He left on a point of principle because he wouldn't do something that compromised the privacy of his patients. He was not forced out of medicine. He left of his own volition and gave up his license only a few years ago when he realised that he wouldn't be returning to practice. It's very important you understand that. VernonColeman.com. Before we come back to the injuries, because it's 19 minutes now.
Can I just say, Richie, I've never been reported to the...
Never. That's right.
I've never struck off or anything. I left, as you said, I left because I wouldn't put diagnoses on sick notes as a matter of principle and gave up a safe and steady job as a GP. But I did it knowingly and willingly, and I only took my name off the medical register because after I got to about 70, I think, it was pretty obvious I wasn't going to go back. And I refused to give them any money or put up with any more of their silly forms every year. So I just took my name off voluntarily.
Absolutely, yeah. No, good stuff. Good to remind people of that because you do have your enemies. People are worried today because although the vaccine minister, Nadeem Zahawi, is saying the right things about passports, you know, and people shouldn't worry about needing to be vaccinated for work and stuff like that. The Telegraph reported today that there is a serious movement by health ministers to bring that very thing in, that firms can insist that their staff are vaccinated. And another thing that worried me today was listening to Times Radio, as I do for my sins. King's College scientist, epidemiologist Tim Spector said, and again, the nodding dogs of the mainstream media didn't say a word. Spector said that restrictions on weddings and sports might go on for years. What are we going to do? There isn't any opposition to this, really, is there? I mean, it's just happening.
No, the Labour Party, as I understand it, has spoken out in favour of passports. But yeah, the fact that there'll be limitations on all these things, I've been saying since very early on that the masks are not going to go away, the social distancing is not going to go away, the whole thing is not going to go away, and the vaccinations, they're going to have more and more and more. Well, I quoted earlier on, Pfizer are expecting to make tons of money because they know there's every time there's a mutation, there's going to be a new vaccine needed because I don't believe for one second that vaccine A is going to be all right, as people have been saying, for all the different mutations. They'll have a new vaccine, and you'll have to have the new vaccine. And the vaccines are terrifying because of the problems they're causing. This is the new Agenda 21 world that we're heading towards, with most people with their eyes shut. They've got no idea what's happening. It's the Agenda 21 which wants us to lead us into a new world where medicine is totally dependent on their version of preventive medicine, which doesn't mean losing weight and giving up smoking. What it means is having lots of vaccinations. That's what the Agenda 21 plan for medicine is for the future. And adults are going to be having as many vaccinations as children have now, and we know that that is potentially so dangerous. I am not an anti-vaxxer. I just look for the facts and write about them and tell the truth as far as I can find it in these difficult days. And there was a paper in the British Medical Journal, which I've quoted before, some months ago during the first lockdown, saying, oh my gosh, isn't it odd? There have been far less childhood deaths. during the lockdown. Why could that be? Yeah. And then they answered their own question and said, could it be because we've been giving far less vaccinations? Yeah. We need to look into this.
And that poor guy, that poor guy was struck off. The guy who wrote that, wasn't he? One of the team, he was struck off, or he's been suspended pending an investigation.
And yet in America, there's a practice, a pediatric practice with 30,000 patients, or there was, this was a while ago,
who
they'd never gave vaccines and they had virtually no cases of autism. I am not saying there's a link, but that was just a fact.
But it bears investigating. And we've had a tweet from Alison, by the way. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest. If you've just joined the programme, you've missed quite a bit. It'll be available later on rerun and it'll be on podcast. Alison says, Richie, a good friend of mine has a daughter who's a nurse in ICU, intensive care. Many deaths, almost all elderly, all being labelled as COVID pneumonia. She told me it is basically impossible for staff to clearly identify any one specific cause of death. And I know who Alison is, and I believe she's telling the truth.
The bacterial pneumonia is the thing that's killing people.
The
bacterial pneumonia is almost certainly caused by the masks, because you're breathing in all the bacteria that are collecting behind the mask. And it's been known, Fauci was one of the co-authors of a paper which said that most cases of patients who have viral infections, they actually die of bacterial pneumonia, which can, of course, because bacteria are susceptible to antibiotics, if you treat people who've got bacterial pneumonia with antibiotics, then they very often recover. But particularly back in the first lockdown, when the government told doctors not to treat elderly patients, just to let them die, and they did in thousands very comfortably, I mean very uncomfortably and very conveniently, they died in their thousands, and the government was very happy about that because it saved them all the money, as I pointed out earlier on. But if those patients, if a lot of them had been treated with antibiotics, I believe an awful lot of them would not have died, because bacterial pneumonia, as I said, can be treated with antibiotics.
Yeah.
There's one other thing that I discovered in the last day or two about the PCR test. Can I go back to that for a minute?
Absolutely right. Remind our listeners now that we know that the PCR test is picking up bits of virus in people and it's giving a green light, and the tester is then declaring the person has coronavirus, when this has been widely discredited. Even a Portuguese court said that it can't be taken too seriously, that it's giving a lot of false positives. Just in case our listeners don't know, the inventor of the PCR test said it should never be used as a diagnostic tool. What have you been finding out in the recent couple of days? This is fascinating.
The problem with the PCR test, of course, is that it picks up any bits of old virus that are left over from a cold you had 18 months ago. So if you've never had a cold, you might well, and you haven't got the virus, then you probably turn out negative.
Yeah.
But of course, they're using the World Health Organization has rules about how the PCR test is done, and the British government, the NHS, ignores the rules and does it its own way, and therefore makes sure that it gets lots of false positives so that it can pretend that we're in the middle of a dangerous epidemic, so that it can pursue the bizarre Agenda 21 project, which is being set up by the United Nations and Global Economic Forum and Schwab and Prince Charles and all the rest of them. People are
pushing. Yeah.
Now, the thing that I found out about the swab, the thing they stick up your nose, incidentally, I'm going to invent one where they just put it in your umbilicus, because that would do just as much good and it's far less painful and it wouldn't kill anybody. Just swiggle a little end of it around in your umbilicus. There's a report from Johns Hopkins University in the United States, very eminent place. There's a report that there's been a study which shows that they can, if they wish, put a tiny star-shaped micro device on the end of a swab, about the size of a speck of dust. And because around half of Americans are reluctant to have the COVID-19 vaccination because they know how dangerous it is, this hidden, I've been aware of this for ages, but I've only recently found papers which relate to it. The hidden injection technology was developed to vaccinate people through either nasal or anal PCR swabs. I think the anal swabs are all part of the compliance and humiliation, but that's beside the point. Anyway, the device is, the device has this thing, which is a tiny little speck of dust with a metal core, and it's got little spiky things on, like one of those parasites which get stuck in dogs' intestines. Anyway, this clings to the side of the nose, and the whole thing's coated in heat-sensitive paraffin wax, which melts because of the body temperature. And at the centre of the core, there is a drug, the vaccine. Or it's not a vaccine, because we know it isn't a vaccine. It's just messing around with genes. But people who think they're just being tested could be receiving the mRNA jab, effectively. Now, is this happening? Is it going to happen? It sounds mad, but how the hell would we know? We can't trust the government. We can't trust the advisors. We can't trust the media. We can't trust the BBC, which has got financial links to Bill Gates. And giving vaccines nasally is nothing new. Children sometimes have the flu vaccines on their noses. That's a live, attenuated vaccine, by the way. Attenuated means it's weaker, but it's still alive and it could still kill granny.
Give you the flu.
The final killer is that they use nasal vaccines for cattle. So it can be done. I just leave you with that thought. I found it. I don't know whether it's going on. I don't know whether it is going to go on. But you think of all the things that have happened so far that a year ago you would not have thought it possible. Would you have thought it possible that millions of people in the United Kingdom would be locked in their own homes under house arrest, and that when they went out, they were told they had to wear something over their face? I'm told these days that they're supposed to wear two or even three masks. Are they trying to kill people faster? It's absolute madness. Would you believe that they were going to almost make mandatory a vaccine which, as I've pointed out, is killing already, after just 6 weeks, is already killing hundreds and hundreds of people and causing thousands of people serious, serious injuries? Would you have said that was possible? Because I wouldn't.
No, I like you, I was aware of a desired agenda, a desired end game. And I because, like you, I've been exposed to those materials, so I knew there was the desire to change the way we live and bring in a draconian, a dystopian way of living. But I never saw this coming. I never saw this coming. And I'm stunned on a daily basis at the acquiescence of people. You know, you hear Luke earlier on saying, I'm going to keep opening up and I'll go to court and I'll look after my customers. And it gives you great joy to hear that. But there's also a tinge of sadness because his surrounding businesses, his neighbours, are not open and they think he's a bit mad. And that's really tragic. It's the acquiescence, Vernon. I never thought people would capitulate like this.
Neither did I. I mean, I just don't understand how people have become so cowardly, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't understand. There are some care home workers who are very bravely speaking out, but why aren't the others? They can see what's happening. How come that there are so many young doctors who are saying nothing? Absolutely nothing about this. If you're not brave when you're young, you won't be brave when you're older. You're not going to suddenly become courageous when you get to 50 or 60. If you're not speaking out when you're 25 or 30, you will never speak out. You'll never find any courage. And yet these people are supporting the government.
Do you know why? Do you know why? Can I venture a guess, and then I'll shut up and get your tuppence worth? They've induced, they've what have they done? They've programmed youngsters into loving to live on social media. They love it. They live there. I see it all the time when I'm out and about. When I go running, I pass younger people, they are staring at a screen as they are walking. So they love that. This has become their universe. And they fear more than anything. They fear humiliation and rejection on social media. So you get a young doctor like Alex George. Alex is good looking. He was on telly. He was on Love Island. His brother, God love him, I think may have took his own life, and he's very interested in mental health, and he's very presentable, Alex. And I'm sure he does his best when he does when he works in the hospital. He works in accident and emergency. But I know that deep down, Alex will fear the rejection and being cast out by social media. I believe there's something to that, Vernon. I really do believe that. You know, the herd basically expelling you because you dared to say, well, hang on a second, I read a book by an elderly, not so elderly, but a more senior doctor like Vernon Coleman, and I want to explore what Vernon Coleman is talking about. He knows there are grave consequences for that. That's the thing. And it's the social consequences more than the financial ones. I don't think it's so much money anymore. It's being labelled that guy, being piled in on social media. Maybe I'm talking through my arse, I don't know, but I think it's got something to do with it.
I think it may have. That would explain probably the difference between younger and older, because I've never been on Facebook. I don't know how you get there. I've never been able to get onto Twitter. Mind you, I did try to get on Facebook and Twitter, and they wouldn't have me on. I got little notes saying you're a danger.
You're not welcome. That's right.
Welcome. Get on Voyage. Go away. Facebook actually said I was a danger to the community. I thought, if that community is dangerous by a 70-year-old is in danger from a 70-year-old doctor, then they've got a big problem. But that's beside the point.
No, anyway, room at the end.
I'd not done all the social media stuff, and then I started making a few videos. I'd always had a website since the day before wheels were invented, I think. But there's another thing about vaccines. When I was talking about nasal vaccines, something else I was reminded about, because I wrote about this over a decade ago, when I in a book I wrote about vaccines, which is that they can put the vaccine into vegetables and fruit. And they were doing this a decade ago. So I'm damn sure they're much better at it now. They can put, they genetically engineer a banana or a tomato or a potato, and it'll still, you can cook it, and the genetically engineered bit will still
no
be
way.
Against whatever it is.
Wow.
Now, the vaccines, they were talking about giving these fruits and stuff to babies and children so they didn't have to bother with the problems of giving them vaccines with injections or nasally or whatever. Now, if they were doing that 10 years ago, they are doing that now. And how much are they doing it? Don't forget, as I said, 50% of Americans do not want the vaccine. What do they call them? Refuseniks.
Refuseniks, yeah, yeah.
I call them sensible people.
Sensible people. I did a phone-in on Thursday. A lovely gentleman phoned in. He'll be 80 next birthday. Ron, he's on Twitter as Ronaldo. Ron, he's nearly 80. And him and his wife are doing very well, thank God. But he said when they phoned him up, he said, no, thanks. Very polite man. And they said, we'll put you on the decline list then. That sounded a bit like a threat to me.
Yeah, I've been put on the decline list. And they sent me that little form, which was very good of them, because I found it really useful, because I could see just how they were telling porky pies to the poor sods who were getting there and didn't realise just what the truth is about the infection and the vaccine. And I understand they're also sending persuaders round to bang on your door. So if I get a persuader comes round to bang on my door, he can queue up behind the guy from the TV licensing.
Do you know how stupid I am, or how dumb I am sometimes? I never knew there was a TV show called The Persuaders with Roger Moore. I never knew anything about it.
Very good.
Was it? I see all these memes popping up, all these photographs, because I wrote an article about this, and I see this stuff popping up, and I'm like, what's going on? I had no idea. I was ashamed of my life, because I am a bit of a TV buff, and I do like Roger Moore. We've got 90 seconds left. I'm going to give you the 90 seconds. We've had quite a few questions about people and the law, about employment and the law. Maybe next time, next Monday, if it is next Monday. That's up to you, by the way. Maybe we might look at what people can do when their employer starts telling them they have to have it. Maybe you might think a little bit about that in the meantime.
My first thought is that you should ask your... And this, I'm no lawyer, and I'm not even pretending to be a lawyer.
Yeah.
But I would have thought, given the risks, the known risks with the vaccine, albeit denied risks, except by the UK government, which does actually print some statistics, and so does the American government, if you were to say to your employer, I will only have the vaccine, which I do not want, if you sign a form saying that you will take full legal responsibility for anything that happens to me,
yeah.
and that you will provide money and whatever else I need if I become permanently crippled, or to my family if I am killed. I don't know.
It's good. Why not?
Like that to an employer would probably scare the trousers off him. I'm sorry, that's sexist. I'm not allowed to say that. I say scare the shoes off him.
Scared the bejesus, as we say in the old country. Scared the living bejesus.
Yeah, probably offensive as well. I don't know. You can't say anything.
But we don't care, do we? We don't care. We don't worry about offending people.
We don't worry much.
45 seconds on one of the most recent episodes of An Old Man in a Chair. You seem to get a bit fed up. 45 seconds. I don't want to be rushing, you know. But I'm guessing for a moment it kind of occurred to you, did it, the enormity of what is happening, and you were a bit despairing that more doctors are not, you know, showing a bit of courage, and the vaccination is kind of gathering pace, and I think that kind of got on top of you, did it?
I got enormously upset because I was, first of all, it was compare and contrast. I was looking at all the celebrities who said the vaccine is wonderfully safe and effective, and I knew
they didn't know.
I knew they hadn't studied it, because if they'd studied it, I've been writing about vaccines for over 50 years, researching and writing about vaccines, among a lot of other things, but I have been writing about them for over 50 years, which is why the BBC won't have me within a million miles of a studio. I've been working and writing about them, and I have looked at the figures and statistics and the dangers, especially of the COVID-19 vaccine. And I saw all these celebrities, well-known people, saying the vaccine's perfectly safe, the vaccine doesn't cause any problems, the vaccine is very effective. And then I saw the details of all the people whose lives had been wrecked because someone close to them had been killed by one of these vaccines, or because their life had been wrecked. They'd been left paralyzed by one of these vaccines. And the slick, easy demeanor of the celebrities, the politicians, Archbishop of Canterbury, all saying the vaccine's perfectly safe. Everyone should take it. It will work. It's wonderful. And it just really got to me, Richie. Yeah. I have done videos before. I did a video about the health service, and at the end of it, I just wept, and I recorded it again. It took me three goes, by which time I was so exhausted it must have looked like it. But this time, I just felt, I'm not recording this again. Because I can't record it again, because I know I'll just be the same when I realise how much damage these wretched people are doing. And also because I thought, bugger it. If I'm this upset, why shouldn't people see? Why do I have to hide that I'm upset? A lot of people must be upset. They can see that I'm with them. I share their distress. It's beginning to get to me now, I'm afraid, because there's, on the one hand, you've got these ignorant people who are saying the vaccine's safe and effective. And I know it isn't. I know it's not effective. The World Health Organization admits it's a load of rubbish. Well, no, they don't say it's a load of rubbish, but they say they can't say that it's going to stop you getting it or passing it on. And there's all these people saying it's safe and effective, and yet I've seen the lists, the death lists. Go to my website or to Rich's. Mine's got the today's on, and Rich's will have soon, I'm sure.
I'll do it later. Yeah, I will. I will do it tonight. Yeah. I should. I will. No, it's hugely important that people know this. They have to know this. That's informed consent. Informed consent is knowing that. If you know what Dr. Vernon Coleman knows, and then you decide to have the vaccine, well, fair play to you. You know,
that's fine.
Good luck.
I have never, ever said don't take a vaccine.
Yeah.
All I've ever said is, look, before you take a vaccine, find the facts.
Know this.
I did a video a couple of days ago, yesterday I think it was, saying about what informed consent was. And I drew attention to the fact that when I went to the dentist 10 days or so ago, I had a molar removed. And before he would remove it, he told me all the things that could possibly go wrong. And so then I signed the consent form because, yes, okay, go ahead, do it. I understand that's what informed consent means. I bet you there isn't a patient in 1,000, a patient in 100,000 who has been told by their doctor what the dangers are, what the risks are, and what could happen if they have the vaccine. And that's one of the reasons why I think an awful lot of doctors and an awful lot of nurses are going to be in a huge amount of trouble when this whole fraud is finished, because then people are going to say, you didn't tell your patients what you were doing, and they were part of an experiment.
No excuse. Yeah.
So I'm terribly sorry to have to tell you, you're a war criminal.
And there's no excuse. You're right. And equally, there is no excuse for producers at the BBC not to report on the adverse events and the deaths. They are honour-bound as journalists to do that. You know, they should do that. But
I tell you what, there's one thing throughout all this which said to me that what's wrong with everything that's happening on. That is the suppression of debate. The BMJ ran a paper about this, pointing out that debate had been absolutely finished. There is no debate. There's one side and there's another side. And our side has no access to the mass market media, to the mainstream media. The other side controls all mainstream media and will allow no debate. Right at the beginning, 10, 11 months ago, I pleaded with Witty or Valance to debate with me in public. And I said, if I'm wrong, you can destroy me in public. Yeah. I'm prepared to risk my reputation, whatever there is of it. I am prepared to risk my reputation in a debate with Witty or Valance or Hancock, if he wants there, or all three, live, because I don't trust anybody to edit the programme, live on a network BBC programme. And the fact that they will not allow me within a million miles of a studio, 1,000 miles, probably not a million miles away from one, they will not allow me is proof, if proof be needed, that they are hiding things. And why do they not want to debate? Because, I'm sorry to have to say this, I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but I believe this to be true. They don't want to debate because they'll lose. If I lose, all that happens is I look an idiot. If they lose, the whole fraud is over.
The house of cards comes tumbling down, right?
The whole thing goes.
We'll leave it there for today, then. I'll furiously edit this to get it repeating on the dot at 10 o'clock and midnight tonight. For those of you who came in late, it will be podcasted, of course. Do go to vernoncoleman.com. And the books, there are two very important books there you can download. I've also got them on my website. They're on thelightpaper.co.uk as well. A great addition to independent media, thelightpaper.co.uk. We'll do it again next week. If you're around next week. If not, we'll do it the week after. But next week.
I'll be here, Richie.
Sounds like the plan. Thanks, Vernon. And an old man in a chair, brandnewtube.com. All the episodes archived there. Don't miss them. Thanks for your company again tonight, Vernon.
Pleasure, Richie.
And speak soon. Bye for now. Dr. Vernon Coleman, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show. That's it for the programme. It's time to go back with you tomorrow at 5 o'clock, as usual, with more guests and more chat. And I'll furiously edit this now, so I will. I'll furiously edit it. Alrighty, do stay in touch with richieallen.co.uk. There are lots and lots of articles on there now, and there will be in the days and weeks to come. Opinions, of course, opinions. And you can mess around with them, leave your own comments and whatnot. And there is a social aspect there. There's a social tab as well, where you can tell your own stories and all of that. Thanks very much to Dr. Vernon Coleman. Thanks to Luke from Kate and Luke's Cafe. Bye now. See you tomorrow. To the house.